You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Linda's going to read to us our passage from Romans 13, and you'll find it up on the screen.
Owe no one anything except to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
What a great group to look out on. Good to see you all. I came to know God because of love, just love. I grew up in a pretty dysfunctional family. My parents fought all the time, and my mother died at 39 of breast cancer. And so we kids grew up with my dad. And it was a lot crazy in our home. But all the while, I knew God intuitively. I just knew God. And I called on God, and I knew God was there for me and comforted me. God's the one who got me through all the trauma in our lives. And so God was not the author of the, you know, impossible to meet standards. God was the respite from impossible to meet standards. My husband and I began going to an evangelical church. Oh, and yeah, I said we had no church growing up. But I found Jesus. I wasn't born into Christianity, but I got there as quick as I could. So my husband and I began to go to church as soon as we got married. And we found a really good church, actually. It was a really good situation. And so we just grew and learned and began to lead. And he was a worship leader, and I sang harmony. And, you know, it was all really hunky-dory. And we were there 20-some years. And then our daughter called me from college. She said, Mom, I think I'm bisexual. I'm like, what? Yeah, I've tried to pray it away. It won't go away. I've done everything I can, and this is who I am. It's like, oh my gosh, what's going to become of her? Will she fall in love? Will she have a future with someone? Will she get a job? What does this mean about her faith? What does it mean about our faith? And we'll never be the same in the church again. I knew that. And we love you, and we'll be there for you no matter what. That I knew instinctively because of God, because I know God is love. God says God is love. And we were there for our daughter. Well, I decided to test it out in the church. You're so funny, Susan. I thought, well, we'll see. I haven't heard anybody say anything, actually, so I'll see. So I shared with a couple of friends. Here was their answer. It's a sin and you can't accept it. Really? Actually, it's my daughter. And how can I not accept her? What are you talking about? But it was an answer as though they'd pulled it out of a manual, you know. And so we chose our daughter and we left the church. But I was very disturbed by how quick that answer came of rules instead of love. And so I pressed into it and I started to study. And you know, I'd gotten the gist that it was not okay because of the Bible. And so I studied and found out, and I was like, oh, they're what? 6 verses at most? And they're not even relevant? The culture? It's a completely different what? This doesn't apply at all. And that was very eye-opening, because you kind of take what you hear at face value and figure, okay, they know what they're talking about. Well, they didn't know what they were talking about. And the more I studied, the more angry I got, because people were being badly hurt by this kind of doctrine. My daughter Annie told me about her friend Alex, whose mother pushed her down the stairs and threw dishes at her when she came out. Was that in the love of Christ or not in the love of Christ? And it was just, it brought me in to realize there's a lot of work to do. The church is upside down on this, the church that I knew of. I know there are other parts of it, but the one that I'm concerned with was upside down on this. And so we started pressing into it, and God tricked me into writing a blog, and I did. I'm just kidding, but really, God did trick me. And I wrote this blog and started, and I brought on, you know, the wrath of people who don't like their doctrine questioned. But I knew that I had to do it, and people came out of the woodwork to say, I told my mom, and she won't stop crying now. Or my daughter's come out, and I don't know what to do about it. Or my son says he's a girl, you know, and all of these things. And I didn't give them doctrine, and I didn't give them, you know, what the pastor said. I love them, and I love them well. And all the while, I could just feel God saying, that's exactly what I gave you this to do, what I gave you to do. And it was very deeply satisfying with the people I was loving and deeply disturbing for the culture that was hurting these people. So I thought, I'll just go ahead and do my own doctrine. I'll write my own stuff from Jesus. And I realized that so many churches pretend that Jesus is the driving force behind all the things they do. But really, he's more like a masthead. He's more like a brand that they put up on the wall so they can say they're Jesus's. But they don't listen to anything he says. They really don't. And outliers like me, like my daughter, like many of you, Jesus is here for you, Jesus. He tells the story of the outlier as the included. Jesus is always including those on the edges. I love that about him, don't you? When I was a little girl being, you know, so alone and afraid, he had room for me. I love that about him. If we lose that, we've lost everything. So he's the one that describes God, that we can climb in God's lap for rest. I like that. I like that kind of God. I want to be rubbed on the head when I don't feel well. One memory I have of my mother, and I have few, but one I have is when I had the flu, and I was in her lap, and she just kept rubbing my head. And it felt so nurturing. And that's what God does. That's the God Jesus describes to us. All right, so let's take a look at some of the stories Jesus tells, because I'm going to back this up with Scripture, okay? So you can believe me for sure, not that you aren't, but let's take a look at the Good Samaritan. This is an amazing story. There's a man lying beaten by the side of the road, and this religious leader is like, nope, and he goes over here so he doesn't have to be bothered with this man. It's his job to bother with this man. But doesn't have time. He needs to attend to his religious obligations. And so he walks by. And then the law person who's in charge of the law does the same thing. He crosses over. No, I didn't go near him. He goes on. And then the Samaritan, who you have to understand, he's a really hated person in that culture. This race is hated by the Jewish people. And he comes by. Let's just say he's a person of color, a transgender person of color. Maybe he's even an immigrant. And he comes by, and he picks the man up, and he takes him into the hotel, and he says, here's money for him. You take care of him. If he needs more, you take more care of him, and I'll pay you when I get back. And that's who Jesus holds up as a neighbor. It's not the one who got all the doctrine right. It's not the one who told him, well, did you invite that on yourself? Did you do that to yourself? He's the one who took care of the person who needed to be taken care of. We need to carry that story as our banner story of inclusion of the outlier. There's the amazing story of the woman forgiven for adultery. Okay, here's this woman brought in for adultery, Now, the first thing, are you suspicious already that a woman is brought in for adultery? It's pretty hard to find somebody in adultery alone. I'm just putting that out there. But the man was probably one of the men setting her up. So they're throwing her under the bus. They don't care. So Jesus responds to this woman by saying she's included. You bet she's included. And any of you who think you need to impose the law on her, you go ahead if you don't have anything against you. Whoever's without sin, cast the first stone. They're like, and they walk away. But I find it incredibly disturbing that they come to Jesus ostensibly for his answer. Yes, Jesus, tell us what you think. But they don't really want to know. They already have their answer in their hand. Do you find that disturbing, how eager they are to kill this woman? I'm very disturbed at how many people are ready to kill our LGBTQ children. And they are. Throwing them out of the community, out of their homes. Did you know that 40% of our homeless youth are LGBT, which is 10 times what it should be for the norm? Why is that? And 25% of them are being thrown out the same day they come out. How prayerful do you think that response is? I don't even answer a difficult email the same day. Going to throw your child out on the same day? It's really odd, isn't it? But that story of the woman forgiven for adultery, that's Jesus' story of inclusion. And then if you're any kind of, as you hear that strain in the story, I don't know what your background is, but as soon as you hear that story, this will pop up. What is it? Well, he said, go and sin no more. Oh, well, then go ahead and throw stones. Yeah, because that's the point of the story. No, it's not the point of the story. The point of the story is drop those stones and get out of here, because you have no business correcting her. I'll correct her, Jesus says. And then he doesn't correct her. He says, I don't condemn you either. Okay, that's the huge part. I don't condemn you either. They were all gone. He could have condemned her. And they would have bet that he would have, really. I mean, that's what a good pastor should do. But he didn't do that. And then he says this thing, go and sin no more, is what's written down. Well, we have to look at that. First of all, is that what it means? Because nobody goes and sins no more. So that's like saying, yeah, and go ahead and jump to the moon. Well, nobody can do that. So why are you telling me that? Well, maybe that's not what he's saying. Maybe what he's saying is, don't miss the mark anymore. Don't listen. Don't miss the mark of letting these people who have your, you know, no interest in you. They're trying to trick me. Don't let them drag you in here and just take crumbs from them. You let yourself be loved better than that. It's kind of like we would want to tell our daughter who's dating somebody who's not very good for her. And we'd say, don't take that. You deserve better than that. That's what he's saying. Doesn't that fit his character more? Doesn't that fit the story more? So I'm just saying, don't let people say, well, he said go and sin no more, because that is a complete distortion and breaking of that beautiful story where he's defending the marginalized. He's saying to her, you're included. How about the woman who anoints Jesus? We've got this story of this woman who crashes into this all-male leadership meeting of religious leaders. What the heck is she doing there? And she's a woman that the town calls a sinful woman. Jesus doesn't call her that. And she comes in and starts scandalously rubbing his feet with her hair and her tears. Oh my gosh, take it to the bedroom. I mean, right? But Jesus and the Simon, who is the host, he's like, well, if Jesus knew, he doesn't even say this, he thinks it. If Jesus knew what he was doing, he'd know that he should be sending her out of here. She has no business doing that. He can't be a prophet. And Jesus, he says, Simon, when I came, you didn't offer any refreshment. And this woman has done all of those things. So he corrects this host, this religious leader, and not this woman, because she's included. He was telling that religious leader, she's included. Don't you love that about Jesus? You see in the pattern that's emerging? I love him. I love him because he includes me. He includes my girl. He includes all of us in this room. That's something to come to church every Sunday about. Yeah, I love that. Maybe you've heard the claim that the Bible says one man, one woman. Okay, you know, we do see in Genesis God created a person. Adam means a person. And then after Adam notices there's no other human being for partnership, then God puts Adam to sleep and then sexually differentiates this individual into two people, a man and a woman, and then they can be partners together. But that's just a prototype. That was not the definitive for all situations for all time, was it? It wasn't. I mean, does Jesus not know that David was given multiple wives by God? What about all that multiple marriage thing? Well, you know, it's not historically been one man, one woman ever. That's just ridiculous. And also, doesn't Jesus know about intersex people? Intersex people means people who are born with amorphous characteristics. They may look like both male and female. They may look like neither. Or they may have one characteristic outside and another characteristic inside. That happens a lot. It's about as common as redheads. That's a lot of people. I see a redhead. That's a lot of people. And so does Jesus not know about intersex? Of course Jesus knows. So when he is saying about one man, one woman, in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19, referring to Genesis, what he's talking about is this thing that they had going on called no-cause divorce. They're asking him, well, what about divorce, Jesus? Can we divorce our wives? No-cause divorce, kind of like no-fault divorce today, which kind of leaves the party on the bottom of the whole thing in a terrible place. And he's saying, you won't treat marriage like a revolving door. That's not what marriage is. It's a commitment. And so he refers back to that to revitalize their understanding of what it means to marry somebody. Not like, you know, the wife du jour in a revolving door of wives. And so we've got to see things in the context in which they're meant, or else we're worse than the worst Pharisees, distorting Jesus, distorting God for our own doctrine and our own excuse to reject people. We can't do that. I'm not saying you do that. I'm saying we as a body of Christ can't do that. Why would religious leaders do that? Is it something about maintaining their status quo, their power, their money? I don't know. I don't see another reason that makes sense. But if we're not defending the outlier, the lowliest, the least of these, as Jesus says, and he doesn't mean least in worth, of course. He means the least in power, the least in visibility, the least in ability to defend themselves. If we're not defending them, we should just stop doing this. Another phrase we've heard is tough love. Have you heard that phrase? Yeah, how does that feel? Feels pretty tough. Doesn't feel like love. And really, that phrase was originally coined in the 70s, and it was meant to be more like boundaries. It was this man who had developed a halfway house at risk youth, boys. And the tough love was the rules they had, like, you know, no stealing from each other, no hitting each other, have to be in by curfew, so that they could be included. That idea was to include them, not to exclude them. It was boundaries, that's all. And healthy boundaries are a good thing. But to say, I'm kicking you out of your home in the name of tough love, that's just bullying. That's not okay. So we should set boundaries as we need to for the purpose of inclusion. But bullying is not okay ever. And Jesus always stands on the side of the one who's being bullied, not the bully. The entire heart of the gospel is inclusion. It really is. That's the entire message. And inclusion of the most outlying person. That's leaving the 99 sheep and going after the one. That's what that whole thing means. That's why we love Jesus. That's why he's here 2,000 years later. We're still having church services about him. Because he does that. Because he defends the marginalized. That's what we love. Have you heard this phrase about go and tell your brother their sin? There's a lot of mileage in this phrase. You get to go and tell your brother everything you think he's doing wrong in the name of Christ. That's in Matthew 5:23. It even says, so if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar and you suddenly remember someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice, go and be reconciled to them, and then come offer me your sacrifice. Wait. Sorry, it says, if someone has something against you. Oh, being gay is not anything against me. Even if I, didn't like it, it's not against me. So this whole thing about go and tell your brother their sin, this means if you they have something against you, not even if you have something against them, but if they have something against you. Ah. So you're presenting your sacrifice, you're having your morning prayer, and you suddenly realize, because God is there, wow, I was really harsh to my sister on the phone. Okay, I'll call her. You go call her, you make that right. Then you come back and have your prayer time. That's what that means. It's for the purpose of inclusion. It's to make relationships right in community. All of these things are how do we live together in community? And when someone has something against you, you seek them out and you make it right. Sometimes it requires being humble. It requires saying, I was wrong. Ugh, don't we hate to say that? I've found that Christians have, I know I'm really broadly generalizing, sorry, but especially the conservative Christians that I know, that I was in their churches for so long, they have a really hard time saying, I was wrong, I'm sorry. It's like saying, tar and feather me because it doesn't come naturally. But we're called to be humble and to admit when we're wrong for the purpose of coming together in community. That's what it's all about. Jesus was always about including the outlier into community, drawing people in, keeping them in, so we can live together well. People don't do well out on their own. And people who are shoved out on their own, they don't do well. That's why the suicide rate is so high. And besides, if we're supposed to tell people if someone has something against us, go and reconcile. I don't see those conservative Christians coming to the LGBTQ community. Generally, I don't. There are some. But by and large, they're not coming to the LGBTQ community and saying, we have wronged you. You have something against us because we have been horrible to you. We weren't there in the 80s with the AIDS crisis. We weren't there when these kids are being kicked out of their homes or their churches. If we want to be like Christ, that's what we do, isn't it? I know, I'm a dreamer. And then I was told, I had something I had talked about, that God doesn't care about the rules. Jesus didn't care about the rules. He cares about the relationship. And somebody says, Jesus does get mad about breaking the rules. He yelled at people in the Bible. And I said, okay, do you know who he gets mad at? I didn't really do all that. I didn't answer her so much on commenting, but answering here, well, who does he get mad at? It's the religious leaders who were excluding people. That's who he got mad at. He didn't get mad at the gay kids. He didn't get mad at people having interracial marriage. He didn't get mad at immigrants. Sorry, I'm a guest. I can say what I want and leave, right?
We're with you.
Okay. He didn't get mad at people really seeking to do the right thing and to live their life well and to struggle through another day and to push aside their suicidal thoughts so they could get out of bed and face the day, or struggling to have enough money to pay for their kids when they're a single parent, or somebody who's been evicted now and they're homeless. Those aren't the ones he corrected. He corrected the ones doing that to them. I love that about Jesus. I'm sure you do too. So when we look at, when he got mad at the religious leaders who were hurting people. That's what he got mad about. That's why he turned over the tables, because the religious leaders were selling these, you know, doves and these goats and stuff. The people would travel and having spent their money and have these sacrifices, and they'd look and say, oh, there's a blemish. You can't use that one. Here, buy ours. It's three times the price. And then that one would just go to the back of the line anyway. You know, you can find a blemish on anything any time when you look. So that's what Jesus got mad at. So I want you to just take a deep breath for a minute here. And I want you to say, I'm included. Just right now, just say, I'm included. And I want you to take another breath and say, you're included. You're included. Yeah. Because that's what Jesus offers us. When we're looking at any scripture, we need to look through it at it through a lens of love and inclusion. If we don't, we're looking at it wrong. If we're looking from the top down, how to keep people under control, we're the people that Jesus is the most upset with and the most correcting. If we look at it from how do we help people make it and survive and thrive, That's the right way to look at it. After I started this ministry, Freed Hearts, and people just started coming out of the woodwork to say, you know, how hurt they were and how desperate they were. It just went all directions. I started speaking all kinds of places. And we also started this moms group. We got a lot of moms in the back because we're having a gathering right this weekend. And it's an online moms group, and a lot of local areas they gather together, but it's all over the country. And we have just fortified each other with strength and encouragement to say we're not alone, because the easiest thing to do to hurt somebody is make them feel like they're alone. And we have all gathered to say we're not alone, and we love each other, and we're here for each other, and we... You know, oh my gosh, my son's doing this. Anybody else face that? Oh yeah, we have, blah, blah, blah. And that's community. And to be there for each other is really what all of this is about. That's what this whole thing is about. And that's what this church is about. It's what all churches are supposed to be about. So I hope that you enjoy that you have each other in community and that you help others who may be hurting right now and you need community. Jesus' biggest directive is follow me. Follow me. Everything else will fall into place. You just follow me. Love others. Love God and love others. And follow me. I love that about him. So what is this story about? Inclusion. What is that story about? Inclusion. What is this parable about? Inclusion. It's all about inclusion. It's all about inclusion for the least powerful in the whole system. And we affirm, we have come to, you know, through this whole process, my husband and I, we do this work full time, by the way, and I have some books over there I'd love for you to get. We do all this work because of our faith and not in spite of it. And we love Jesus' story of inclusion. It's the greatest story of inclusion ever told. So go out and tell it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.